So we are today at the home of Tom and Helen Carey. Carey, as you pronounce it. I pronounce it the Irish way, so I'm going to try not to call you Carey. We're in Boulder Valley, and it's the 18th of November, 2010. And also here we have Patrick Cook, filmographer for the gathering. So Tom, thanks, and Helen, thanks so much for having us today to your home. First of all, tell me a little bit, Tom, about your Irish background, your Irish ancestors.
Well, my mother is Irish, and her folks were Irish, and the same with my father. They were Irish all the way to Ireland, you know. Or he wasn't from, but his folks were from Ireland. They came out here kind of, you know, when Montana was just about 1865 in that time. And they worked the mills down in, I had an uncle that worked in the mines, but he, my dad and his dad worked in the mills in Kellogg, Idaho and Wallace, Idaho. And then they came over and worked up at Wicks up here in Jefferson City, mm-hmm. in the mills. And then my dad went, in 1900, he went to Alaska on the gold rush. And then his folks didn't homestead, but they bought a place down about 2 miles south here. Mm-hmm. And then when my dad came back from Alaska, he homesteaded up right down here about a mile, and he'd work in mills and work and save up money, and then he'd started a ditch up here about above the church up here.
Yeah.
And he'd work what money had. He had hired two men up there that were good horsemen, and they did it all by horse and by hand. And it was awful rocky.
I'm sure.
But they built an old ditch. All the old timers thought he was crazy, but
yeah.
Now they all want part of the ditch now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then he, my mother came from Hellville and a little up here about 2 miles, a little school, mm-hmm. and she taught at the school and lived down here with the Conn Smiths. And of course they had a pretty good family, and she'd take them to the school in a horse and buggy. And eventually, around 1910, my folks got married. In fact, it'll be 100 years this December 28th.
You mentioned
they got married.
Yeah.
We plan on having a celebration.
Good.
And from then on, it's just family. And we had 12 children, which I'm the youngest. And we lost one baby, just a baby, and another one when he was about a year old.
Oh.
But and then my brother died in 1946 of Hodgkin's.
Oh.
And then the rest of us lived pretty much, I don't remember just how, what was the last, well, Brother John died in 72, was it? And there have been off and on different ones there. So far now, I have two sisters, one in California and one in Butte,
mm-hmm.
and myself, the only ones that left.
And what were your parents' names, Tom?
Frank Carey and Mary Ellen Carey.
And what was your mother's maiden name?
Gallagher.
She was a Gallagher.
We just found out, well, my brother Martin, we have our, the babies are buried up here in the Valley Church,
mm-hmm.
and and our grandparents are buried up there too. But they have a big stone, a big tall stone there, must be 6 feet tall. But they don't have any named stones. So my brother and I decided we want to get headstones for them with their names on them. And Helen was checking, my grandfather's name was Bartholomew Carey. And on the death certificate, Helen had looked it up in Helda, and it was
Bartholomew.
And my dad had signed the death certificate. So that's the name we put on the gravestone. And nobody, it seems like they know, he always went by Bart, or Bartholomew.
Yeah.
So I don't know where this, if that's an Irish name or but it's right on the death certificate.
Yeah.
And my dad signed it, so.
Yeah.
That's how.
Do you know, Tom, where in Ireland your ancestors came from?
Yeah, let's see, what my dad's folks come from
Cork.
County Cork.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother came from
Donegal.
From Donegal. Right. But did they meet then here in America?
But right here in the valley here is where they.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. She came over to teach school here,
mm-hmm.
and he just happened to be up a town, and he was riding the stage, the old horse-driven stage, coming down. And of course, he had talked to the old fellow that was driving the stage, and he let him sit up with the new teacher, and drive, you know, on down. So I guess from then on, that was kind of history then.
He charmed her on the stagecoach?
Yeah. So, and they, well, they were married in, I think it was December 28th, 1910.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and how long was your father in Alaska?
Well, I don't know exactly. I think he went up like, well, I don't really know, about a year though, I think. He spent a winter up there, up on Point Barrow,
mm-hmm.
and he tells about they'd take kerosene and they'd shave it off with a knife to start the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cold. So then him and his partner were coming out on the Tanana River, and it was early spring, and they shipwrecked out there somewhere. The river wasn't completely open, and then he had to spend with an Indian village there until the river opened up.
Hmm.
So, but he always said, in 1941, we're down about 2 miles from where the home ranch was, our house burned down, and then we moved up here. And he always said, you know, everybody said when we had the house fire that it was awful to lose everything. And he said, well, he didn't lose everything. He had, nobody was hurt, and we had another house to go to. And he said, when he shipwrecked on the Tanana River, he lost everything. So,
mm-hmm.
so he didn't feel any, that it could be worse, you know. That, now, when we moved up here in 1941, nobody had been living in this house. Well, I'd live it in the summertime when we were haying up here. One of my sisters would come up and cook, and then the boys. And when we moved up here, I can remember the end of the house right here at the our refrigerator now. And when the wind and blow, of course, that old linoleum on the floor, and the wind and blow, and the old linoleum and come up off the
okay.
floor, and I don't think there was a thing between there and the North Pole. When the wind blew, it was right straight on through.
Oh, sure.
And then, of course, then my dad started remodeling this place, and we didn't have electricity or anything there. and the house had burned down too. He had put a 32 volt Delco system in. So we had water and a bathroom and electricity in the house. It was 32 volts, but we still had lights and the bare necessities. You know.
Yeah. So what year were you born, Tom?
1928.
1928, and you were the 12th?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My goodness. And what was it like growing up here with 11 siblings and growing up on the ranch?
Well, with six sisters, I was lucky to survive, you know. But we had a wonderful life, you know, just a big family, and my sister, just older than I, one of my other sisters, she'd take care of her, and my sister Lillian and take care of me, and if anybody was picking on her, well then she'd stick up for me, and so we really were fortunate to have a good family like that. All of my, out of the six sisters, five of them were registered nurses, and my oldest sister, she worked in for the county attorney, and then she ended up being county treasurer, and then three of my sisters that were nurses joined the Navy and served over in Pearl Harbor. And my brother, Martin, he was the first drafted man in Jefferson County. And he went in June 1941, and he ended up in Alaska before December 7th, you know. And then he spent 42 months up in Alaska.
Right.
And,
did you serve, Tom?
Pardon?
Did you do active service?
Yeah, I was drafted in 1952, and I served in Korea.
Korea.
And I was got out in 1954.
Let me go back to your childhood a little bit. What was a typical day like on the ranch when you were a child?
Well, of course, my brothers all worked, you know, on the ranch, and my sisters. My dad never would let them, you know, go down around the barn or anything, because we had, you know, always had hired men and stuff. And so they always, each one of them had a certain job they had to do, and a certain day they had to wash all the clothes and. My mother had old type washing machines, and some of them were done all the cooking, and they all had their own jobs, so they all kept busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then my two sisters, Agnes and Lillian, started nurses training in Helda at St. John's, and. I think it was 1935, that earthquake was in there, and it shook up Helda real bad. So they were transferred over to Butte,
mm-hmm.
and then they finished their nursing training in Butte. And then my other three sisters, they all went nursing training in Butte too.
Yeah.
Tell them about the earthquake.
Well, that earthquake in Helda, I remember my folks went in the next day after the quake, and I can remember seeing brick houses, this one especially, the whole wall, and it was a two-story house, and the whole wall had fallen out, and it looked just like a dollhouse, you know. You can see the second story, the bed, and the chairs, and everything up there. But, but it held it took a real bad shake in there, you know.
And that was 1935?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When, as part of your childhood, was there much of a sense in your house growing up that you had an Irish, that as a family you had an Irish heritage?
Oh yes, we knew we were Irish.
Yeah.
And, of course, this whole valley was pretty much Irish.
Yeah.
And outside of one other family there, but pretty much all Irish, you know. Then, of course, in the early 1920s and through there was a lot of people moved out here. They, you know, from like Kansas and through there, and they'd have, if they had 40 acres back there, they could make a living on it. Well, they got out here, and you know, we just don't have the rainfall or anything like that. And a lot of them moved in here and never raised a crop, you know. And out in the hills in the east here, there were several schoolhouses. A lot of people lived out through there. And eventually, it just kept fading away.
So it's a lot less populated here now than it was then?
Well, population-wise, in the valley here,
yeah,
I think it is, yeah, because there are a whole lot smaller places, you know, and they had, you know, small places on both sides of the river. My dad used to, they had a baseball team for the valley here, and my dad was a pitcher, and he'd always, there's some of the fellas were real good ball players, and he'd go down to Willow Creek or Three Forks or Whitehall or Boulder, and they'd pitch, or he'd play ball.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, knowing from the Irish heritage, he had a hard time keeping his players sober once they got down to play like at Willow Creek or someplace.
Yeah.
But, and then the oldest girl of the Smith family here, I suppose, I think she was maybe in the eighth grade or somewhere about that age. And they'd be playing, the old ball field is right above the road here. And of course, all the valley would be out watching. And of course, how they always boo the pitcher if anything's wrong. They'd boo the pitcher. And she was wanting to whip everybody. Nobody booed Frank Carey.
Yeah,
she was really a strong supporter of him.
Were there mementos or family recipes or anything specifically connected to Ireland as part of your childhood?
Well, let's see. I'm sure there was recipes. I don't remember. I didn't get that close into the cooking end of it. But when they always had on St. Patrick's Day, you know, and get together, and then what else could you remember? Of course, we had our little church up the valley here.
Mm-hmm. So.
And they, you know, had mass there every other Sunday, and that old wood stove in the middle of it there, and this old fella, that old German fella that lived up on the flat up there above there, he'd always come down and start the stove up and heat it up in the winter time. And
okay, can we just pause for a second?
Let's switch out cards here real quick. Thank you.
And don't forget to tell them that twice.
Great.
So we'd have the stove in the church, so I'm assuming then that little church was used throughout the year?
Yes. And you know, sometimes when it was real cold, they'd have mass in different families in the homes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I can remember, unless maybe if it was real cold, they canceled it or something. But
yeah.
Most time we always had every other week.
And what, did people keep in touch by phone or?
Yeah, we did have a telephone them days, a party line, and you'd ring. I think there was three or four on the party, and course, there were several old, the old timers, they lived right by the telephone. And if you had a call, everybody knew it. It was a cattle buyer. My dad always, well, up the valley, he'd tell him, well, if you just hang up so I could hear, the more people took the receivers off, then they couldn't hear.
Oh.
And so he'd just tell this old fella, Phil, if you just hang up, I'll call you back and tell you what cattle prices are.
Right.
But and this one old fella who lived across the river here, he said he couldn't afford the paper or the telephone. He had to just settle for one, and he got a whole lot more news on the telephones, so he kept the telephone.
The party lines were great, I suppose, for that.
Yeah. But they, you know, my dad run, well, he got sheep in 1928. He bought him the sheep. But before that, he had cattle. And, of course, our cattle would get, you know, turned over to Tostin and in that country. And then they'd go over the fall of the year and gather them. Well, he'd stay with different families over there to. And the same way over on the Whitetail, they'd stay, they'd have the riding or north of Whitehall, and they'd have different families they'd stay with, you know. And it was just common that anybody that came was over riding, they'd, if they were over from that country, they'd stay here, you know.
Yeah.
So,
how many cattle used to be on the ranch then?
Well, I don't remember exactly. I suppose. Before he got in the sheep, I don't really know if he had 200 or 300 dead.
Yeah.
And then he got into the sheep, and he had about, at the most, about 3,000 sheep.
Wow.
And then he eventually he sold down, and in 1952 he sold the sheep and went strictly all cattle then.
Back to just cattle.
Yeah.
And did he keep the cattle all the way through, even while he had the sheep?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when you talk about him going over to Whitehall or places like that to get the cattle, how long would it take to do that?
Well, I imagine they'd be gone 3 or 4 days, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, now it's all, you have a truck here over and back in a half a day, you know. Mary Dunn
died.
This old one, Mary Dunn was one of the original families that moved in here. They lived across, were in a house just about identical to this one here. And she never married. And of course, all her brothers had died off, and her dad and she had a hired man that lived there with her. And later on, I think it was 1936, when she died, the roads were all drifted in and everything. And I know my brothers and some of the neighbors had to go over and just bring her, you know, after she died, they had to bring her over on a sled until where they can get to in with a car or a truck or something. And, but it was nothing to have the roads blocked, you know. You always had a lot of groceries on hand.
Yeah.
And,
when there was a death in the community like that, were people waked?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, yeah, they were all. I remember my brother, when he died in 1946, he died in the hospital in Butte, but it was a mortuary in Butte that handled it, and they brought his body out here, and he was waked right here at the house here.
Your dad was.
And my dad too. I mean, that was just kind of the way you did it them days, you know.
Yeah.
And,
what would that consist of? What happened at the house during the week?
Well, it was just somebody would stay with the body all the time, all night.
Pray the rosary.
And then say, priest can come down and then say rosary, or at least a rosary or more. And all the valley would all come down and you know, spend time there.
Yeah. So somebody would stay with the body through the night?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, usually several of them would stay with it.
So there was no mistaking that you were Irish in the valley growing up?
No, I mean that was, you know, you didn't have to be reminded of it. In fact, we were pretty proud of it.
Did you go to school here in the valley, Tom, or?
Yes, when my oldest sisters and brother started school in Boulder, and we lived down about 2 miles down here, and my dad would had a house up in Boulder, and they'd move up during school year, they'd move up and go to school up there. And then I think it was in around in the 20s, I think exactly what year it was, but Cardwell said that they had a high school and a grade school, and they said they would furnish a bus if we'd go to Cardwell. So then from then on, everybody, all of our family went to Cardwell. And then I think it was Agnes was the last one, I think Agnes, or John maybe, was the last one to graduate from Cardwell, from high school. And then the rest of us all graduated high school from Whitehall. And they went to grade school in Cardwell, which is a school is still going on. Mm-hmm. Has, I don't know how many kids.
All our kids.
Yeah, all our kids did the same. They went to grade school in Cardwell and high school in Whitehall. And
tell me about the school buses.
Yeah, some of the old school buses that originally had, it was even before my time, it was just an old Ford truck, and they had a kind of a crate built on the back with canvas, and they had benches in there, and they'd run the exhaust pipe up through the middle, and then you put your had that for a heat, and if you put your feet on it, then it'd burn your overshoes. And they used to when the little kids, I remember my folks talking about when the little kids, they'd heat bricks and take bricks and keep their feet warm. And
how many of you would have been?
Pardon?
How many of you would have been on the bus?
Well, there was, this is the furthest up they came, and it would have been, you mean our family, or?
Just how many children would have been in the back of that truck?
Well, maybe, I suppose at the most, see they went down part ways and then took another route into Cardwell, and I suppose by the time they got down to school there would be maybe 10, or
right.
10 at least, and 10 or 12, you know, something like that.
Yeah. So, aside from your time in the service, have you lived here all your life, Tom?
Yes.
And what year did you and Helen get married?
1958. June 23rd, 1958.
And are you from the valley too, Helen?
No.
So how did you two meet?
Well, she came to, she went to Carroll a year, and then the fellow was the doctor that was in charge of the school up here in Boulder. His daughter was going to Carroll, and she came out with her on a weekend, and so she had talked to the doctor about jobs, and she got a job teaching school up here at the school up here in Boulder. And of course, after when she came here in the fall of the year to start teaching school, some of the folks out in Boulder had it already lined up with me. So that's been 53 years ago.
You were clear, you were happy enough to go along with their plan for you then?
Yeah, I was real happy. And still am.
Where are you from, Helen?
From North Dakota.
North Dakota.
Almost at the Canadian border.
So you came out here to go to college?
At Carroll.
At Carroll.
Uh-huh.
And you never left?
I never left.
Good for you. So how many children do you have?
We have eight.
Eight.
Two boys and then all six girls.
Six girls, just like your own family, six girls.
Yeah, six girls and there was a few more boys. So
And what are your children's names?
Tom Jr. And Christopher and Robin and Heidi and Shannon and Megan and Kate, Aaron. We always call her Katie, Aaron and Molly. I was supposed to be able to name the girls. She named the boys, and I was supposed to be able to name the girls, but the name she picked, I liked real good, so I didn't argue with her.
They're lovely. You got some fine Irish names there, too.
Well, and everybody's got nicknames, so it sounds like we've got 16 children instead of only eight.
All right.
Because they go by their nicknames even yet today.
So, and Chris is here on the ranch, is that right?
And both boys are here. They live right up the valley here, about a mile. We split the ranch up here, what year was that?
About 10 years ago.
Was it 10 years ago?
8, 10 years.
About 8 years ago. And so we just kept enough to, she has to have her cows. For a city girl, she has to have her cows. And then the boys split the ranch up. And then we work with the oldest boy. We help him hay, and they still use some of the corrals here, and it's still, you know, all run different places, but they still
cooperative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We still ship all of our calves from down here. I'd put in scales, and they'd so we ship everything out from here, and. It's worked real good, so.
And you have the bed and breakfast as well, of course.
My wife has that, she.
So Helen, you compiled that book about the history of the valley?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
That was to celebrate the bicentennial year in 1976, and we felt like it was really important before all the old timers died to get some of these stories on record. So to commemorate the year, a couple of us got together and figured out a way to preserve some of these stories. The way we did it was to have all these older families write their own history.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just put it together in a booklet. A lot of the families were dead and gone by that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we approached the older members of the community and had them put together all their recollections. And then we wrote the story to go along with the remembrances.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out well.
It's lovely.
Uh-huh. And kind of maybe puts together a little bit of the stories and the customs and the events for the valley and put it in a tangible form, I guess.
Yeah. So this is maybe a question for both of you, but are there any particular characters, I mean you talk about the old timers in the valley, are there any particular characters here in the valley over the years that you can remember as being particularly notable, or who had great stories.
Oh yeah, there
oh,
was
sure.
there were several of them.
Mike Quinn, Paul Smith,
yeah.
George Dawson, Nifty Dawson.
Yeah.
Nifty.
Yeah. They're, you know, they all were just fine gentlemen that really made an impact on the community. There also were a lot of young men who came from Ireland and
worked on the
yeah, and worked for people never married.
Mm-hmm.
They when years were really tough, they worked for their board and room and for a little tobacco and a bottle now and then, and they just became a member of the family. They're buried in the little church in the cemetery there, and their graves are still marked. We've tried to research, so at least their graves are marked. They don't have stones.
Yeah.
But the diagram shows where they're all married. What, Jack Walsh and
Johnny Walsh.
Johnny Walsh.
Yeah.
And who are some of the others?
Oh, gosh.
I'll think of them in a minute.
And they came directly from Ireland?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So how would they have come out here? Did they have family connections? Or?
I think some of them did. Like, you know, like the Gillicks had come to the Tuies. And
yeah.
Yeah, or the Bradys.
This old, one old Irishman, well, there was a couple. I think they weren't really, I don't think they were really Irish. But they I think the family was in from Elkhorn, and then the two of them worked on the valley here, and neither one of them married.
Who would that have been?
Charlie Harrington and...
Oh.
And, I can't remember now the other one. But they always told a story about this one old one. I'll get his name in a minute. But, he was quite a drinking man. He'd get uptown and Sunday mornings there was a bench out in front of the saloon up there, and he'd be sitting out on the bench.
Pat.
Huh?
Pat was his first name. Pat Lonnie.
No, that was a long time afterwards. Smokey Harrington.
Okay.
Charlie Harrington and Smokey Harrington, they're brothers. And this old Smokey Harrington, he couldn't read or write. And Sunday mornings he'd had the paper looking at it, you know, and this...
Probably to keep the sun out of his eyes.
But this one fella didn't want to embarrass him, so he said, Smokey, you got the paper upside down. And Smokey turned around and looked at him and he says, hell, any damn fool can read it the other way.
Sharp wit. Uh-huh. And they would have worked as ranch hands?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And there must have been about a half a dozen of them all
old,
together.
Old Frank Wickham. He never,
oh, yeah.
Never married. They had a ranch on the other side here, and finally they'd sold it. But I can remember my brother, old Frank, got to, he was well in his 80s when he died, and my brother asked him one time, Frank, how old do you have to get when you forget about women? He said, I don't know, you'll have to ask somebody older than me.
Very good.
What was the story behind Nifty?
Nifty Dawson?
Yeah.
His dad was quite the...
old-time cattle. Well, that was who went to Alaska with your dad.
Yeah, he went
yeah.
With my dad to Alaska, but he didn't stay very long. And so my dad had an old 45-90 rifle. And of course he was going on up to Nome, so he sent the rifle back with old Bill Dawson. And he was a real good friend of my dad's. They shipped cattle back to Chicago on the old trains, and my dad would have maybe three or four carloads of cows, and old Bill would have three or four head on there. But he was quite the poker player, and he had a big diamond, and he'd like to flash that diamond when you playing poker.
A diamond ring?
Yeah.
It was beautiful, great big one.
My dad used to say on the, they'd be shipping these cattle back through Iowa and through there, and they'd stop at these small towns and load up pigs and more cattle and stuff. And they were going to market back there in Iowa. And of course, there was one, my dad always tell about this one time, this, there was a bunch of farmers who get on the train back there, and they had pigs on there. And they were, they'd get into a poker game, and of course they'd, you know, nothing to do there, they'd get into a poker game, and they'd lay for some greenhorn, you know, to take all his money. And but they got old Bill Dawson in a game, and they'd play day and night, you know, just never stop playing. And old Bill would want my dad to stand in behind him so that some of these others tried to see his hand or anything. And so old Bill, if they'd stayed long enough, old Bill would clean them out. And this one other fella that was on the train told my dad, said, "Guy," he says, "you know, I ride this train quite a bit, and this certain bunch," he says, "they get on this train, and they'd all, there'd be, I don't know, three or four of them, you know, and they'd find some new fella, and they'd get him into a poker game, and then clean out everything he had." And then he said, "Boy, I was sure glad to see this fella clean them out." He cleaned every one of them out.
And, but then Nifty was this old Bill Dawson's son.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how he got the name Nifty, do you?
No.
Did you ever hear?
No, I didn't.
I never did either. Anyway, he died clear up in his 80s, 25 years ago or
Nifty
something.
Nifty did?
Yeah. Yeah. And his son ranches up the valley, Tom Dawson. Old Bill was quite a character, though.
Yeah, I remember, I suppose I was maybe 15 or 16 years old, and this old Bill had some pasture down south here, and he had some horses out there, and they wanted to go down, he wanted to go down and see these horses, and this old Mike Quinn had a stock truck, and so they let me go with them. I was sitting in the middle, and we went down there, and of course both of them chewed tobacco, and the wind was blowing, and of course they rolled the window down, they spit out, and everything come back in, and so they decided that they'd just use one window, they'd spit across, and I was in the middle. So I got both of them were spitting over the top of me off and on. So, when our house burnt down, well, my oldest sister was working in Whitehall for the county agent down there then, and she was staying with Pete Dawson, and it was all related to all the Dawsons were related, and she was staying with them and working at the county office. And of course, as soon as they heard about the house burning down, well, they brought my sister up, and she was staying with my mother there, and nothing new, but my sister is just older than me. We had to go back down to the Dawson, old Pete Dawson's took us back down there at their house that day. Mm-hmm. And I remember old Pete was wanting to find out, you know, about the fire, you know, and it was about 20 below, and he'd have to roll his window down and spit out the window, and of course I was sitting right behind him, and about that time I'd have to duck all the vapor coming down off there. And, finally his wife got after him and told him, and he was wanting to know all the particulars about it. And,
yeah. About George Dawson leaving the pub.
George, him and my oldest brother were riding. Of course, some days he went horseback everywhere. And he came up to ride with my brother. I think they were riding out in the pasture out east of here. And so he brought me up a kitten. And I suppose I was maybe 4 or 5. And he brought me up this kitten. And he had a pup. He just got a new pup. So he had brought the pup up. So he left the pup with me to watch it. That was the plan, his plan anyway, to leave the pup with me. And he brought the kitten up for me. And of course they rode for half a day or so, and they come back. George stopped in to get the pup. I thought he'd give it to me. And I guess I went a tailspin, you know. He just brought the cat up for me, but he had to take the pup back. And I told him, well, take your goddamn pup and take the damn cat too. So, which I don't think he did. But
how old were you?
I suppose 4 or 5. You know.
Any other characters in the valley that's come to mind?
Any other what?
Characters in the valley that come to mind?
Well, there was old Ed Smith. He lived right at the house, you know, where the Elkhorn turned off is up there.
Yes.
Well, he lived in that house right there. And whenever they had a get together, and celebrating everything, and well, he'd be the music. He had a fiddle.
Oh.
Yeah, he had a fiddle, and I can remember when my brother came back from the. He had a 30-day leave. Well, he was in the army. He came back, and they had a big party for him here in the room. There was our living room then, and they rolled up all the rugs and this old Ed Smith had get his fiddle out and everybody all square dancing. Guy, they'd sweat and run off, and they never worked so hard.
Tell them about the bottle that they have downstairs.
Well,
with the iced tea.
At the same party, my older brother, some of the folks that come out, in fact, it was one of the Smiths, a real good friend of my dad's, he was there, and he liked his little drink pretty good. And so anyway, I suppose I was maybe 15 or so, and my oldest brother had it in the basement. He had a bottle and an overshoe there hanging in there, and so he'd invite different ones down to have a drink. And this old Jack Smith, he was quite a friend of my dad's, and me too. He'd always come out and go hunting. And my brother invited him down to have a drink, and of course they killed the bottle. So I went up and got some tea, and I put some tea in the bottle, and they made it, it looked just like whiskey, and stuck the bottle back up in there. And the next morning, my brother invited my brother was here from the army, and my cousin down said, "Come down." And I thought he had a drink left down there. So we went down, and my cousin, of course, he was raised up in Great Falls, and he wasn't quite as wild as the rest of them. And my brother handed it to my other brother first, and of course he took a drink, and he didn't say anything about it. It was just tea in there, and he gave it to my cousin, and he took a big swig of it, and coughed and spit and sputtered around. Nobody could figure out wherever it came of that, who did that, I never told him. So. Another thing, when I got old enough to vote, The whole valley, except one family, was pretty much, they'd always vote Democratic on the primaries, you know. And we'd vote just in the houses, you know. They used to have the old schoolhouse was up about 3 miles above here. Well, then Toohey's bought the old schoolhouse, moved it down there for a guest house, and that's where we'd go up there and vote up there then. And of course there's some of the older ladies in the valley, they were the clerks and the, when all the, when they call them the
collection judges.
Collection judges and everything. And so my one brother, John, him and I was, my folks had already went up, and my brother and I decided we'd go up and vote. So outside this one family, the acquaintances, they always voted Republican, but everybody else in the whole valley were, would, in the primaries, would vote Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
So John and I decided we were going to change things, so we voted Republican. And those poor old ladies that were the clerks, I think they went to their grave trying to figure out who was the other Republicans. You'd hear them in a get-together or something, they'd be talking back and forth, you know, and trying to figure out who voted Republican.
When you were growing up on the ranch, working on the ranch, were there any particular skills as part of that work that you learned from older workers on the ranch?
Well, just hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Smith, he had the Dodge dealership in Helena, and I always had hay fever real bad, and I suppose I was maybe 17 or somewhere in there, and he wanted me to come in and be a parts man for him, which I thought that, well, that'd be right up my alley, you know. I was always kind of liked interested in trucks and stuff, and my dad didn't think much of that. Of course, them days, during the war, you couldn't get help. And my dad said, there's plenty to do on the ranch, you know, down. So that was the last thing, you know, if you liked it or not, you stayed on the ranch and,
yeah,
and worked.
Tell them about the Mexican Nationals.
I guess it would be like in 45, 46, somewhere there. They'd get these Mexicans up to work in the summer. The first year we had one of them up, and then Toohey's up there had a couple of them. And the next year we had two, and then I think Toohey's had three or something. And they were from right down in the far Mexico. They didn't know what a glove was, you know. And they had these, what do you call them, sharapes, for a coat, you know, just a blanket with a hole in it. And they didn't know what, sandals, they didn't have shoes or anything. And everything, if they didn't want to do anything, they just didn't savvy it, you know. And of course, my oldest brother, Francis, my other brother, John, was with the sheep down there. It was in the spring of the year, and he was lambing out the sheep down here about 8 miles below here. And then my oldest brother Francis was taking care of the cows up here. And then my dad had sent the two Mexicans with him. And of course, you couldn't get them to do anything. If they didn't want to do it, they just didn't savvy it, you know. And then on the weekends, we had cattle to move or something, my brother Francis and send the Mexicans with me, and we'd have to move cattle or something, and it was, you know, they didn't understand it, that kind of there, and if they didn't want to do anything, they just no savvy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I guess maybe our patience got kind of thin the time we're doing. And no Sammy, your son of a bitch, you'll... And anyway, that weekend, they went to Whitehall, walked to Whitehall, got a hold of this fella that was supposed to be the interpreter.
Right.
And he couldn't speak any Spanish, so there was a bartender there with... He could speak... well, he was a Greek, but
yeah.
He could speak a little Spanish. And all they could get out of these two Mexicans is Senior Francis and Senior Thomas. No bueno, too much son of a bitchy, huh?
And how long did they stay for, Tom?
Most of the summer, I think.
Right.
But my dad can take them out and build fence or something with them and get along with them fine. But if he had anything else, they were, any manual labor, they were pretty good at. But
so after you got married and you raised your family here on the ranch, what, again, a typical day on the ranch in
well,
the 60s?
Well, my all-girl crew, when we'd go out and change sprinkler pipe, or, my girls always worked out, you know, they'd help my brothers move cows, and they all liked to ride, and they'd do anything we had to do, they were willing to do it, you know, and they were good at it, too. And, I can remember when I was feeding in the spring of the year, and I'd be pulling a wagon with my truck, and with hay on it, and every time I'd go, I might have to go through a dozen gates in order to feed different bunches, and every time I have to get out and open the gate and then go through and then get out and close the gate and everything, well, I'd take the girls with me and I'd leave the truck in the low gear and turn the key off. And then I'd get out and open the gate and they'd turn the key back on and start the truck and drive through. And as soon as they got through, they'd turn the key off and save me from having to climb in and out of the truck a couple
yeah.
of times. And so... they got where they were better than the boys.
So your girls got to do more than your sisters did around the
oh,
ranch?
Oh yeah. Yeah, my sisters never did, my dad never would let them work on the ranch. Our girls, they broke all their own horses.
They had every animal known to man.
Yeah. Chickens, they had different, get all these different breeds of chickens, he'd order them and get them baby chicks, and we had ducks, and this one neighbor up there, one spring, the fox, he had a foxhole right up in his mailbox already, and the old fox had three or four young ones, you know. So Tommy and Chris went up and they trapped a couple of those fox and brought them down, and we had a crate about the size of that couch there made out of chicken wire, and we put them fox in there, and they'd you know, we'd feed them and everything there, but they never did gentle down, and they were always kind of wild. Of course, some of the girls had ducks, and the ducks, they'd let them out in the mornings, and they'd walk on by this fox pen, and the old fox and eye them ducks up every step they went. They'd looking at them ducks, and when that fall, it was dark in the morning, and this, one of the girls went out to feed the ducks, and as they were walking past the fox pen, the fox found a hole, they got out, and now they had dead ducks laying everywhere. So, that was the end of the fox.
Any particular cures or common cures for common ailments, home cures or anything like that on the ranch?
Well,
I'm not froggy.
Well, this old fellow from Whitehall worked for us there one spring, and he had this cure. It was good for anything. And he'd take a frog and put it in a jar and put it out in the sun and let it let it melt down.
A frog?
Frog. And then he'd take the oil that melted off the frog, and if he had a headache, he'd rub it on his head. If he had a knee ache, he'd rub it on his knee, and he claimed it was...
I wasn't expecting that.
But most, you know, of course, in them days, you didn't have all these old cold pills. You had, when you had cod liver oil and mineral oil, and when we were, I suppose, still before the house, long before the house burned down, my one sister, Agnes, she was in charge of giving us our, my sister is just a year older than me, she was in charge of giving us the mineral oil and the cod liver oil, and had a spoonful of each every morning. My mother had put a bottle of lye, wasn't it?
I think so.
Lye up on the shelf, and she didn't know about it. So the next morning she gave me a shot of lye, and it burnt my throat, you know, and just burned it real bad. And I remember they called the old doctor down from Boulder. The doctor come down, and they said he'd reach in with his finger and just pull out a bunch of what was it?
Burnt skin.
Burnt skin, I guess. And but I survived all right. When I was 5 years old, 1935, well, I'd been actually 6 years old, I guess, before I started school, I had a cleft palate. And of course, them days, you know, there was no doctors around here. There was a doctor in Billings that was kind of a specialist on that. So my folks took me down to Billings in that hospital there. And I had the operation down there. And there was a nun, Sister John Marie, and she was the head of the nursing down there. And we got to know her real well, and she took real good care of me. And so eventually, when my one sister Rose was going through nurses training in Butte, she was transferred up to Butte. And of course Rose got to be real her favorite, and this doctor, Allard, I just saw the other day, they named
The whole wing of the hospital
down in Billings for Dr. Allard.
Right.
And I think he had a son that was a doctor too.
Down in California.
In California?
That did Lolly's hip.
Yeah. No, that isn't the same deal. That was, the doctor was from Mayo's.
Oh.
And then my sister Ellie, the one just older than me, in 1941, after the house burnt down, we moved up here. She went back to Rochester. My mother took her back to Rochester, and she had a congenital hip. And of course, they didn't have replacements them days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went in, and she was there all summer at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And they built the hip up, you know, kind of, I don't know just how, with bone fragments and everything. And she got along, you know, it wasn't a perfect job, but she got along all the time with it. And then she missed a year of school. And then when she got married, and she married a fellow from Butte, and my name McConnell, and they moved to, the mines were pretty well shut down then, so they moved to California, to Long Beach, California. And eventually, I don't know, just quite a while after, she worked as a nurse all the time down there, and she had 7 kids, and her husband worked in the shipyards, and then he got that asbestos poisoning and died down there. But she finally got her hip operated on down there at the hospital. It was
they let Stanford or something.
Yeah, Stanford, I think it was.
Years later.
Years later, and got a hip replacement put in there then.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be the doctor in California that put her hip replacement in was the son of the doctor that did it back in Rochester, Minnesota.
Oh, when she was a child.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, she was a sophomore in high school.
Were there any superstitions on the ranch or in the valley?
Oh, yes. There was a lot. All Irish families had a lot of superstitions. You didn't go underneath the ladder, or you. A lot of them.
Maine wouldn't kill a spider if there was hay down because it would make it rain.
Yeah.
Oh.
And, I know my mother had.
Oh, they wouldn't let you have your picture taken if you were pregnant. It was bad luck to have a photo taken if you were pregnant.
Yeah.
And my sisters,
had you heard
I
heard the spider one?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
My sisters, especially one of my older sisters, in a funeral or anything, you had to stay around
the graveyard.
You had to stay around there until it rained.
Uh-huh.
It had to rain even if it was just one drop. You had to stay there until it rained.
Happy the corpse the rain falls upon. You never heard that one either?
Well, it rains all the time in Ireland.
Yeah, that was probably.
Yeah. Now my two daughters, Shannon and Heidi, is an Irish family in Three Forks. Well, one of them was a cattle buyer, and his dad was a cattle buyer, and so we've known the family for years, and they were going back to, this one family was going back to Ireland here, what, 10 years ago? It's been that long. And,
they were going for a family reunion.
Yeah, they were going, and they still, some of their families back there still own land back there in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
And so, right at the last, some of them couldn't make it or thing, and so they had it all, everything reserved and tickets and everything. So my two daughters went with them, Shannon and Heidi,
yeah.
And they had quite a time. They tell about all the. I think they kissed the Blarney, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and visited the Shrine of Our Lady of Knock and went to, they did all the tourist things
when,
in Ireland.
I was a kind of sick here, 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had a kidney stone, and I was in the hospital down in Bozeman, and I got septus, and they didn't think I was going to make it, what was it? What was an Easter? Easter Sunday, and all the priests were busy, and masses and everything. So Helen went down and got the chaplain. And what was he?
Happened to be a First Lutheran minister. That was the chaplain there, and he came up, and he was going to give him the last rites. One of our daughters said, Reverend, would you mind anointing my dad? I brought some water from the Shrine of Our Lady of Knock in Ireland. No, it wouldn't bother him at all. So he was anointed with Our Lady of Knock by a Lutheran minister.
But clearly you had to survive that.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've never been to Ireland, Tom?
No,
no. No. The kids would love to take him to Ireland.
And then our granddaughter in Bozeman now, she's on the Olympic
development
team on shooting.
For the 2012 Olympics in London.
And so they fly her everywhere. She's a freshman in college in Bozeman, and they fly her. Remember, they have to go down to Colorado
to train
all the time.
She
and then
just
here
finished the World Cup
this summer, they flew her to Germany, and she was in Germany. I know for
she does shooting sports.
Yeah,
right.
And they're training her for the Olympics in
2012
in London. So you know, I might get to Ireland yet.
It's very close. What's her name, Tom?
Kylie Gagnon.
Kylie Gagnon.
Yeah, and her in-laws, her grandfather, her husband's grandfather, you know, her husband's father, was a typical little Irishman that worked in the smelter over in Anaconda, and he's still alive. He's just turned 90.
We like to look out for her and be cheering for her. Let me just ask you a couple of questions, Helen. Working on the ranch, obviously you weren't brought up on a ranch, were you?
No.
So
I was born and raised in a small town in northwest North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you first came to the ranch, what was it like? What were your impressions of it?
Oh, well, I loved being outside, and so I'd ride and help with the cattle or help in the hay fields or
whatever had to be done.
Whatever had to be done, cook for the hired men a lot. And of course, raising our kids. The oldest was 12 when the youngest was born. So when, I guess, you know, if we were branding, we took the kids along. Many's the time I took a baby in a little plastic bathtub all swaddled up in there and put them on the seat of the truck while we branded or did what had to be done, and I just packed up the kids, and we took our kids everywhere. Like, who could get a babysitter for 8 children? So from an early age, the kids were just drug around with us, and if we were, I don't know, if we were out feeding cows, the kids were wrapped up warm and taken in the truck with us.
If we had to take a load of, we had a lot of pigs them days, and we'd haul them into Helena to a packing plant in there, and just load them in the truck.
You couldn't take a vacation back. I mean, you always had the hired men that had to have 3 squares. That was part of their wages, was their meals. And you couldn't take a vacation, so about the best we could do is make vacation fun out of everyday things. I'd pack a picnic lunch. We had to go to Townsend to get grain cleaned. We'd find a nice sunny spot in the early spring and unload the kids out there and have a little picnic out while we were on our way going through the hills, or, you know, if we had fence to build, we'd take the kids along, or if we had to haul salt up in the mountains to the cows, we'd pack a picnic lunch and load up all the kids and take them along. Or the kids all rode from when they were tiny, so, you know, I could sometimes get a sitter for the younger kids, and then we took the older kids with us when we were moving cows or something. It seemed like life was a lot simpler when the kids were growing up, even though it was hard work. it was like at least twice a day you knew where your kids were because they had to be on time to catch the school bus. So I'm glad I'm not raising kids now.
Well, where did you have your children here, or was it in Boulder at the hospital?
No, there never was a hospital in Boulder. The oldest boy was born in Butte, and then all the rest of the kids in Helena. The kids were laughing the other day. I forgot to tell you about this. But I hated to be out of commission, so as soon as the baby was born, I'd come home. And I'd leave the baby in the hospital for a couple of days, and then on the weekend we'd go back with all the kids and let them stand in front of the window and pick the baby that they wanted. And then we'd load them up, bring them home. The girls were just laughing about that the other day when we shipped cattle. They said, well, we always got to go and pick the baby we wanted out of the hospital, all the baskets. So.
That's like when we ship calves or something in the fall. All the kids come home, and most of them, I think it might be one that can't make it or something, but it's always been a family affair, whatever, anything like that. One year, we surprised the kids. We decided to take them to Disneyland in California. So we went through a travel agency and got the tickets and everything, and all the reservations and everything. And so we had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and catch the plane in Butte. And nobody knew anything about where we were going or anything. And the plane couldn't land in Butte. It was socked in, and well, it flew around for a while, and finally it found a hole to come down. And so we all loaded on the plane, and you finally told them that,
it wasn't until we left Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, where
they
thought they were going skiing or something. Mm-hmm. Everybody skied except me. Mm-hmm. And they thought they were going skiing or anything, and then we told them we were going to California, Disneyland. And of course, they had a bunch of cousins that lived down there. And so we had a real good trip down there. On the way, a taxi cab was taking us out to catch the plane that when we were leaving, and he wanted to know about Montana. What all do you want to know, if there's the Indians still around here, and you
we
have
electricity
here,
and
running water.
Water
or anything. I've got to tell you this one though, about her, Helen. We always have a big dinner for Thanksgiving or Christmas. She always has a big dinner, a bunch of people here. And this one time, she had about, I don't know, three or four pies, pumpkin and apple cherry or something like that. But she always had three or four different kinds of pie. I had this fellow working for me here, and of course, we had a whole table full out there, and after we ate, well, she was bringing pie out, you know, and she'd ask them, you know, what kind of pie do you want? Everybody'd say, well, you want an apple or whatever. She came to this fellow that was working for me, and she said, what kind of pie do you want? Well, I said, there's only two kinds of pie I like, and you can just see her get mad, you think. I suppose I've cooked all day now, and you don't like any kind of pie. So what kind of pie do you like? Well, there's only two kinds I like. Well, what's that? Hot or cold? So, you can just see her.
So you said, Helen, you didn't like to be out of commission?
No, I don't like to be away from home. I just like to be here with my feet on the ground and doing my work.
Yeah. So you'd come straight back from the hospital with
your
baby at the hospital?
Yeah. One time I even talked to the doctor and let me ride back out to Boulder with him and just left the baby there for a couple of days. Some of the kids, like the first one, you know, you had to stay 3 or 4 days with that, but after that it was just for the day and then went home the next day or something.
That was in St. James in Butte,
yeah.
The oldest one, Tommy. And so I had 5 sisters that graduated nurse training out of there.
St. James.
And all our family went to the St. James Hospital.
They had a room there that they called the carry room because they put us all in that same room all the time.
So
I
went in day to get Helen and Tommy out, and we come out by the desk there, and you know, normally they'd say, well, we'll just send the bill out to you. And I couldn't take the baby until I paid for the bill.
And, yeah, hadn't brought a checkbook with me yet. They asked for a counter check.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me take the baby until I paid the bill. And I didn't, you know, I just never brought a checkbook with me or anything.
Yeah.
And they just happened to have a counter check I had to make over.
So a couple of last questions for you. If you were to write the history of the Irish of Montana, what do you think should be included for future generations?
Well, I would think the importance of it, you know. We sure wouldn't want it to fade away and not this younger generation have no value in it. Where I was raised, you know, that was, if you were an Irishman, you were, even in the army, a lot of them would call you Irish or something, you know. And I would want to keep the heritage, you know, alive.
You married in, as it were, but you've done so much with the local history and so forth.
You know, it's always been amazing to me of the Irish influence in the mines, in agriculture. You know, you even saw a lot of them in logging. And it always struck me that no matter what type of work they were doing, they were such hard workers. There weren't a terribly lot of Irish people back where I was raised,
mm-hmm.
but those that I knew that were all hardworking people, very, very hardworking. And when I came out here, then I really saw the impact that the Irish settlers had made, particularly in this valley. And even generations down, they passed that work ethic on. You see it even today, that the ones of the Irish heritage all seem to be such hard-working people, don't you think?
Well, we get out of the work if we can.
Well, and responsible. You know, they all seem to have sense of responsibility that you don't see in a lot of ethnic groups.
I just heard somebody told me the other day after the election that a good thing that whiskey was as accessible as it is, because otherwise the Irish would have run the world.
Well, that's great. Thank you both so much. If you wouldn't mind, we might take some photographs and take some video footage of outside.
Okay, that'd be great. Do you want to eat first, or do you want to do that while I'm getting everything prepared?
Well, let's do that now.
Okay.
Why don't I take him and show you that Victrola?
Okay.
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
I know you might want to take a picture of it or something.
Oh, yeah, I'd
yes.
love to.
Just tell me a little bit about that Victrola we do that, while I still have this running.
Well, it,
Was it your parents?
Yeah, my parents bought it after we were married in 1910. And then after they died, my oldest sister got it.
Yeah.
And then when her oldest boy was in high school and in woodworking and stuff, he was going to take it and cut up it's one that stands up, you know. He was going to cut it and make a bookshelf or something out of it. And I told him, oh, guy, don't do that. And I'll buy it from you, or I'll do it. Well, he didn't really have any value to it, you know. So he gave it to me. We had a family reunion here this summer, but 5 years ago we had another family reunion. We haven't tried to have it every 5 years. And some of the kids, I think it was Molly and Kate or something, took a recorder and taped some of the old Irish songs off of there, and they all during the reunion, they were playing all these songs on their tape deck, you know.
So does the Victrola still work?
Oh yeah, yeah. And I when it was one of the few things we saved out of the fire, you know.
Right.
We lost most everything in the fire, but it was in a living room kind of off on the north there, and so they saved that and the piano and a few chairs. But they only saved the few records that were in there, so we only had like 5 or 6 records that we saved.
Yeah.
And then this fellow in Boulder had a record player like that, and he wanted bands and stuff. Well, then a neighbor up here, old Mike Quinn, he went to every auction sale in the country, and he'd buy up anything, you know, and he ended up with a bunch of them records. And so when he died, his wife gave them all to me. And so I got records, I've a whole shelf of them that I've never played, you know, I never have gone around to play it. This fellow in Boulder, he wanted more bands and stuff like that. Well, I didn't care about the bands. I wanted singing, you know. And so that's what what I've got now are the ones, I don't know, the shelf, I don't know what's a little bit everything, but someday if I live long enough, I'll play a ball.
Yeah. And did your family used to play it a lot when you were
growing up? Well, I mean, that was a privilege. You had to only got to play it on the Sunday afternoon, and you had to be good before you got to be able to come in and listen to the Victrola there. It was a privilege if you got to listen to that.
Well, let's have a look at it.
Okay. I've got to do some work on the real busy.
21 grandchildren.
Yeah, 21. Here's the pictures out here. Just came out here. We just built this on here a couple of years ago. And then, like a Christmas something, we'll have cables running the whole length here. This is our whole crew here. Well, there's one more daughter-in-law, or one of the nephews got married, and he's got 2 kids. And where is he? This one's got one more, a little girl. She's the one from Helmville, her husband. And then she got a little girl. And then, that's there, her dad, Chris and Sam. And the oldest boy. He just bought a house in Manhattan.
Oh.
And he's got two little boys. So,
yeah.
And this is all the grandkids here. And then she wanted something furry, and she wanted a fur coat. We were in auction sale in Butte, and I bought two buffalo. So and we had them for about 3 years. We wanted to start raising them or have some beefalo or something like that, mm-hmm. but they never. Cow never would breed up, so we never did have any young ones. And finally, we got where they wouldn't stay. Like they'd take off about twice a year and tour the valley.
Oh.
And so all the neighbors got to call it up to here. Buffalo just went through our place up here, and then we'd have to go up. Chase them down, so we ended up getting butchered.